it was in 1928, maybe a little later, the Book of Common Prayer had a prayer that underwent some slight changes due to kind of an advancement in technology. Before the 1870s, there was no such thing as a light bulb, right? 1878, I think it was, Thomas Edison invented the light bulb, and in 1880, I think it was, it started to be manufactured at a popular level, and so that people could buy them. I don't know how much they were, but probably expensive, I would imagine. But people started putting light in their homes, and so because it wasn't so dark, the Book of Common Prayer had a change made to talk about nighttime. And so I want to show you the old version of the prayer in just a minute. But we're going to be talking about Jesus all December and just looking at different themes about him and his life. And we want to look at these five things as we march through the Sundays and also on Christmas Eve of December and learn just different things about Jesus and believe. What's our goal here? Our goal is really just to believe more deeply in who he says he is. And you'll be surprised at how that changes your life. Believing more deeply in who Jesus is will change your life. Here's this prayer. And I'd like to say it together. Can we say it together? I know it's unfamiliar, so if you're comfortable with saying out loud, go ahead. If you're not, that's okay. Just read it along, but I'm going to start it here. It says, Almighty and everlasting God, in whom we live and move and have our being, we, thy needy creatures, render thee our humble praises for thy preservation of us from the beginning of our lives to this day, and especially for having delivered us from the dangers of the past night. For these thy mercies, we bless and magnify thy glorious name, humbly beseeching thee to accept this our morning sacrifice of praise and thanksgiving for his sake who lay down in the grave and rose again for us, thy Son, our Savior, Jesus Christ. Amen. And the part that changed was the dangers in the past night. They took it out because of this revolution of lighting. And it's amazing what light does to the night, isn't it? What light does to the night. I was just in Yorkville driving through the other day, and they put these new lights up. Have you seen these? These new sidewalk lights like along the main drag there. Have you seen these things? They look really good. And it's amazing how much light changes the night. And even this prayer was changed as light began to fill homes and buildings and streets and so on and so forth. As we come to the scriptures today, we want to discover that we need a light. We need a light that's capable of causing us to escape the darkness. And we'll talk about that darkness, the darkness that fills our world and the darkness that fills even our own hearts. We need a light capable of piercing, of penetrating that darkness and bringing life to light in the midst. We need this light to enter us into the glorious grace of a new creation. And as we come to John chapter 1, that's what we're going to find. We're going to find a light. We're going to find the greatest light that there is. We're going to find the Lord Jesus Christ and his entering into our world. The subject today is that Jesus is the life-illuminating word. John's going to describe him as a word. And when you receive that word, it comes in and it lights up dark locations and gives life where there's no life. And so we're going to look at Jesus in this way. Now we want to escape darkness by a new beginning from the word. We want to escape darkness in our lives, in our world, by a new beginning. Jesus and the God of the Bible, he's always offering to us a new beginning. He's always doing this. Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that just a wonderful idea that God, the God of the Bible, is always saying, look, start afresh with me. And many of us have had this occasion where we've gotten off the wrong path and we realize, oh, I need a fresh start. And God says, come on. I got one for you. And that's what we enter into today in John chapter 1, verses 1 through 18. And And our purpose is twofold. I mean, it depends on who you are and kind of where you're at in your life. But there's two things I think that Jesus would have us come away with as a purpose from this text. Number one would be first to receive the light. And verse 12 is really going to talk about what is given to those who receive him. And the second would be what John the Baptist does. We want to bear witness to the light. We want to bear witness to light. We want to have spiritual flashlights everywhere we go. You follow me? We want to have spiritual flashlights as we enter into the lives of our families and the lives of our friends. And we just want to take the light of Jesus with us everywhere we go and shine it into dark places. We want to bear witness to the light. So we want to receive it and we want to bear witness. We want that light to shine out from among us. And so we're going to read here the scriptures from John chapter 1, verses 1 through 18. We're going to find two ways Jesus penetrates the darkness for our escape, for our escape. So let's read the scriptures. It says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it." The idea is that the darkness has not won. Verse 6, "There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to bear witness about the light, that all might believe through him. He was not the light, but came to bear witness about the light. The true light, which gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. But to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And we have seen his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. John bore witness about him and cried out, 'This was he of whom I said, he who comes after me ranks before me because he was before me. For from his fullness we have all received grace upon grace. For the law was given through Moses, grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God, the only God, who is at the Father's side. He has made him known.'" The first thing I want us to see, and we're going to break it down, verses 1 through 13 first, and then the final paragraph there, verses 14 through 18. The first thing I want us to learn is that this word, Jesus Christ, he penetrates dark places or dark locations to bring life and light. Now, you need to understand, what is the nature of light? Like, if we turned all the lights off in here, now you might be able to see because the sun's up, but when it's nighttime around here and you come in this place, you can't see anything. You trip over the pew and you stumble around in the darkness. But when you turn the lights on, you can see. And that's the way Jesus functions in our life. Now, I want you to think about this. What is the opposite of life? Tell me. Death. What is the opposite of light? Darkness. You see, it's very simple. He came to give us both those things, life and light. And so when we look at the opening paragraph, I want, notice how it starts. It says, "In the beginning," what does that make us think of? Genesis, doesn't it? Let's go to Genesis real quick. In the beginning. So John is starting his gospel calling us back to the original creation because he's going to tell us of a new creation, you see. And it's very similar, except one is very physical and one is going to be very spiritual. And so we go back to Genesis and chapter 1, verse 1, and we read, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep." Okay, let's stop there. I want to talk about this a little bit. When you see in verse 2 the words, it says, without form and void. The word without form, it means without shape. You know, you think if you see those space pictures of the earth, you know, it's like this globe that contains all this stuff, right? You know, it has all this stuff on it. And the idea here is that it was without, it wasn't a vessel that could hold anything. It was disorderly. It was unsettled. It was uncontrolled. It was unfurnished, perhaps, is the way that the Greek Old Testament says it. It means, the Hebrew word is tahu. It's tahu vabahu. Isn't that fun to say? Isn't that just so fun to say? Tahu vabahu. Everybody say that. Tahu vabahu. Without form and void. Tahu vabahu. And it means, tahu means a wilderness, a wasteland, a desert. Empty. But not empty as in nothing's there. Empty as in it has no meaning, has no significance, has no purpose. You see, this is the idea. And purposelessness, it lacks significance. This word is used of cities that are in ruin. They're there, they're just ruined. Or used of a desert place, a wilderness, a place where there's just no life and survival. And so without form is the idea. Without form, there's no ordered shape so that things can thrive. And then the second word that's used is void. It's the word means unsightly. It also can mean empty or a wasteland. It describes in one place the scene of the land of Israel due to sin and the wrath of God. It's empty, you see. So here's what I'm trying to tell you. The opening credits, or the opening scene of the biblical story, is we have the Creator, and He's the great cause of everything. He's the one. The God of the Bible is the one who made it all. But when we come and we look at the earth in Genesis 1-2, something's gone wrong. We don't know what it is, but something's bad because it's disordered. It's formless. There's no furnishings. There's no inhabitants. There's no life. It's dark. It's scary. That's the scene. That rock your world a little bit? I don't know what happened before. You know, God's eternal. You know this, right? He's always been. Our story starts right here with a dark, scary, empty wasteland. And what does God do? Look at verse 3. And God said, stop. He spoke. Now what appears to be a verbal activity of God here in Genesis 1, verse 3, when we go to John 1, and it says, in the beginning was the Word, we find out that activity, that verbal speaking of God is actually a person who makes and creates forms. In the disorder, he brings order. That word. In the dark place, he brings light. What's the first thing it said? Let there be what? Light in the darkness. Now, let me say this to you. Listen. Some of you might say right now, my life is a lot like that beginning creation. It's a wasteland. You might look at your life or the life of somebody you know and you say, it's just a desert. It's disordered. It's out of control. It's a wasteland. There's no life there. It's just dark. But folks, we have a God who speaks. And that word is actually a person who can come into your life. And he brings with him light. And he creates order. And he brings life. And he brings light. Let's go back to John chapter 1. and look a little more into this. So John is, he's reminding us of Genesis when he says, in the beginning. And then he says, was the Word. So he says something a little different than what Genesis says. But the Word, where my mind, when I hear the Word, I think of, well, God spoke and it came about. And so my mind, as I just naturally read, a word is a word, you know. And in Genesis, it said that God spoke and things happened. And so that's what my mind connects to here, was the Word. And so the Old Testament is the background here. And the Word was with God. Well, of course it was. God spoke and it happened. But then look what it says. It says, and the Word was God. Oh, well, that's different. He's saying something new. The Word itself was God. This is a person. And it says in verse 3 that verse 2, he was in the beginning. Now he's personal. He was in the beginning with God. And all things were made through him, through the Word. And that's true. You go back, it says, and God said, and God said, and God said, and God said, right? So all things were made through him, but he's personal. And without him, without the Word, was not anything made that was made. And so what we're learning here is that the Word is this personal, eternal, illuminating life. That's what it is. That's what he is. For he goes on in verse 4 and he says, in him, or in the Word. And he's treated like a location here, like inside, in this person, in this Word, in the location of him. Was life. If you find him, you find life. And the life was the light of men. So you not only find life, but you find the light that people need. And why do people need light? Oh, he's going to talk about that in a minute. Verse 5, he says, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. So here's the idea. Darkness has two spiritual meanings in the scriptures, okay? There's a darkness that's in the world, and it's Satan's system, okay? It's the darkness that comes with the evil one and Satan's system, and sometimes that's as high up as influencing governments and world officials, and we read about that in Daniel, and he has a system, and he's evil, and it's dark where he is. But this darkness is also found in the human soul. When we read in Ephesians 4 that the Gentiles have their understanding darkened, and their minds are futile. It's talking about how the non-believer just walks in darkness. They haven't seen the light. And so that's the idea. So this darkness, it has a twofold meaning. It can refer to just the evil that's in the world, or it can refer to the evil in me. And this light, it says in verse 5, it shines in the darkness, friend. It comes into the dark places. It comes into our world. It comes into the soul, and it exposes darkness, and it lights up the place. Amen? And that's what Jesus does. And look, the darkness has not overcome it. The darkness can't defeat it. The darkness can't win. The darkness hasn't won. Even when it's as bad can be, the darkness still doesn't have final victory. The light still shines through. Satan won't win, and your soul can have light in it through the Word. He goes on, he says, there was a man, verse 6. He kind of takes a time out from the deep, deep stuff. He took us all the way back into creation and talks about it, and then he takes a time. He said, hey, there was a guy. And this guy, he was sent from God. It says of John that he was sent by God. I mean, his birth, the timing of his birth, the things that he would do, all in according to plan in God's sovereign story, okay? So the timing of John the Baptist's coming is purposefully right before Jesus comes. You know, he's the cousin of Jesus, and he's born just a few months before Jesus, and the point is he's supposed to come before and clear the way in the heart for Jesus. He preaches a message of repentance, so that the heart will clear itself out, will turn from sin to God, and be ready to receive the Word, Jesus. And so that's John's ministry. And he was sent from God. Verse 7, he came as a witness to bear witness about the light. So he's not the light, it says in verse 8. He's not the light, but he came to bear witness about the light. He's going to tell and point people to the light. And brother and sister, if you know, listen, if you know about the word, Jesus Christ, if you know about the light, you know what your job is? You bear witness about that light. That's the most important calling on your whole life, is to bear witness about this word. And you can do that anywhere you are. You can do it in your marriage. You can do it in your with your kids. You can do it in your job. You can do it through ministries and things like that. You bear witness about the light. You testify. You tell. What does it mean? You just tell people about this light that you found that's lit up your soul. You got to tell your people. You got to tell people. Jeremiah said, I got a fire in my belly. It's not a literal fire. It's this burden. It's this I've found God and I have to speak. I have to tell others so that they might find this light. They might find this life. And that's what John is saying John did. John bore witness about this light. He wants people to know that this word penetrates the darkness again to awaken humans to a new creation. Just like the word penetrated the ancient darkness of creation, John is bearing witness so that people would know that this word has the ability to come into your life and give you a new birth and make you part of God's new creation, one in which sin does not reign and dominate and oppress, but one in which there's victory because Jesus has the victory. Come into it, John says. And he goes on in verse 9, and he talks more. He comes back to the light, to the word. And he says, the true light, the genuine, this is the real thing. Listen, light and life are always themes in religion. It was a theme, these were themes in religion in their day. It's themes in religion in our day. How do I get more light or illumination? Or how do I get more enlightenment? Or how do I get more spiritual understanding? You know, the world is obsessed with this. Spiritualism is as alive today as it ever has been. People are looking for spiritual answers in all kinds of places. All kinds of places. Some of them not going to give you any light, but more darkness. And John is saying, the true light, the genuine, the real, the authentic light, the real light that you're looking for, that your heart wants, is Jesus. He's the one. Listen, in John's day, people were looking for life and light in all kinds of crazy places. I was just talking to I heard a sermon. I was about the Ephesians and some of the false gods in Ephesus. And there was this cult in Ephesus called the Cult of Dionysius. And the way that you experienced life and spiritual experience with Dionysius is you drank yourself drunk. And then you did all kinds of crazy things. Because it allowed you to transcend. It allowed you to leave reality and go into some place outside of the real world. And so Paul says to the Ephesians, don't get drunk. But be filled with the Spirit. Be filled with the Spirit of God. Instead, He has light for you. He's how you experience God, the Spirit of God. Be filled up with Him, like the wind fills a sail and drives the boat to its destination. You gotta be filled with the Spirit. So the true light, verse 9, the true light, the genuine article, the real deal, which gives light to everyone. He was coming into the world. And what we're going to read next is perhaps the saddest thing in all of Scripture. He was coming into the world. This word, this light, he's coming into the world? The one that created? He's coming into the world? Surely everyone will see him and receive him. But no, verse 10, he was in the world. And the world was made through him. It's his world. Yet, the world did not know him. This is the greatest tragedy in all of life. That the world that he made, the world that he loves, the world that he created, and the people who inhabit it would not know their maker. They didn't recognize him. when he came. Paul says it like this, that the knowledge of God, all people have some knowledge of God. You can look at creation and learn two things, that he's different than humans and anything that's made. He's totally different. He must be powerful. Those are it. He's divinely unique and he's super strong, because who can make mountains? Who can make a universe filled with all the glory that it has? Who can do that? So that in the very least, you can learn those things about God by not reading a thing and just looking. But Paul says, we suppress that truth. We stuff it down. We don't want that divine insight. We don't want that divine authority. We don't want that divine power. And when we go down that slippery slope and we don't want God in our lives, he just lets us do what the darkness in our hearts desire to do. And folks, that'll take you to an early grave and to an eternity separated from the light. And so the world, it didn't know him. It was made by him, and he was there, but it didn't know him. It didn't recognize him. And he came, he even goes a step further, verse 11. He came to his own people, his own worshipers. He came to Israel, the ones that for centuries he had revealed himself to these people, and he comes to them, and they don't receive him. They don't hospitably host him. Listen, how long you been listening to stuff about Jesus? How long? How long have you heard? How many years? Even if it's just 15, 16, that's a long time. Some people have never heard. Have you received him? Don't think that you can sit here and years and years, and don't be mistaken. You can miss it. You could have been sitting in these pews for 60 years and not received him. Have you received him? Teenagers, you've been here since you were born. Have you received him? Is the Spirit of God bearing witness that you're his child? The fruit of the Spirit working out in your life? Have you received Jesus? Have you received the light? Or are you walking in darkness? This is for all of us, for me, for each one, this is a staggering statement. He came to his own people, who this had been revealed to them time and time again, and they did not receive him. That's something that stops you in your tracks. Have you received him? Or is all of this just some tradition that you just keep keeping for the sake of tradition? Folks, that's not what it's about. Have you received him? He's a person. He's God. He wants relationship and ownership of you, not just your tradition. Have you received him? Look what it says in verse 12. So the worst news is then, it kind of fades into the background because of the good news in the next verse that says, but to all who receive him, to all who became a hospitable host to the word that came to give light, all who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. That's awesome. So anybody who receives him, anybody, and he explains that. What does it mean to receive? It means to believe. This word believe in John is used, in his writings, is used 92 times. 92 times. You think that's important? It's everything. It's everything. Do you believe? Have you received? And to any who do, any who do, anybody who receives this word into their life, this light into their lives, he gives the right, that word. You have that. I was shocked with the meaning of that word. It means that you have the authority, the resources, and capability to be his heir, his governing child. That's incredible. You have been given the right to be a child of God. How? Just by believing. By receiving the word. To any, To all who did receive, who believed in his name, who he gave the right, he gave it to those believers to become children of God. Children of God. Children, you know, children can be many things. Of course, you can think of procreation here, but the idea here is that you have been endowed with the characteristics and attributes of the one who made you the child. That's awesome. And I just thought of this. If that's the case, if you're his child, the darkness fades away. Because what does he bring? Light. And now look at this. It says, what about these children? It describes them further in verse 13. It says, these children who were born, they were not born of blood. Okay, so this, he's now putting some distance between those who rejected him in verse 11. Look, the way you become a child in this new creation is not by blood. You can't, listen, you can't be physically born into it. Doesn't work that way. Doesn't work that way. Not by blood, nor of the will of the flesh. This is the desire of humanity to procreate, okay? So not of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man. That's a slightly different, that the man might have this plan to create a family or something of his own. How does it happen then? They'd be born of God. God births the new life. Through the word, God births into the new creation. Only he's the Father. Only he can give this new birth. How do I get it? You believe, you receive. And so this first point, the word, it penetrates into the dark locations. It penetrates into the world, the darkness of the world, the system, the sin. It penetrates, but even further, into the dark places of your soul to bring new birth and light and life. And that's awesome. What must I do? You must receive it. And so the second thing in the last paragraph, this one's a little shorter. So it says, and the word became flesh and dwelt among us. And what we find out here is that the word penetrates dark locations, not just to bring light and life, but to also bring this glorious grace and truth. But we learn a little bit more about this word. The word became flesh. So now we're like, oh, the word's not just this light. We know he's not merely personal, but he's also human. When he takes on flesh and dwelt among us, the idea is that he pitched his tent and stayed a while. It's the idea with the temple and the tabernacle of the Old Testament when God made his presence reside at those places. But here it's different. It's so different. God becomes human, and his tent is his flesh. Hebrews says this. The will of God was for Jesus to have a body and to take on flesh. And John writes, we have seen his glory, the weight of who he is, the transcendence of who he is, the altogether differentness of who he is, the glory as of the only Son. He's the one and only Son. He's the only unique Son of God. There's no one like him. And he's come from the Father. And he's filled up with something. He's full of grace and truth. He's come and he's full of grace and truth. This is what he's bringing with him. This light, this word, this person, this God become flesh. What does he bring for us? He brings grace and truth. These two words form the covenant-keeping love of the God of the Old Testament, loving kindness. He's always going to keep his covenant. It's that kind of language. It's covenant-keeping language. He's going to be gracious. He's going to provide you with the truth. And notice what it says. There's a note here in verse 15. It says, John bore witness about him. John, again, he's bearing witness about the word become flesh, the God-man. And he cried out, this was he of whom I said, he who comes after me, that is, he's going to follow in my ministry. John started his ministry, then Jesus came. But he ranks before me, that is, he's higher, he's better, he's chief. Because why? Because he was before me. He's eternally existed. And then we have some closing statements in 16 through 18. It says, it says this, look, the word penetrated the darkness to supply sufficient grace for a new creation. In verse 16, it says, for from his fullness, we have all received grace upon grace. For the law was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. Now, here's what this means. Listen, in the Old Testament, God gave grace. And the way in which he gave grace is he created and he gave his laws and he revealed himself and he put his presence among his people and he gave grace. So these things were revealed through Moses. When it says the law, it's talking about the connection, the religious practices, the beliefs, and the community agreement that Israel had. That's the law. And there was grace in that. People got to know God and have life with him. But then he says Jesus came. And we have grace upon grace, it says, right? That's what it says. The idea is this, that it's grace after grace. Or grace in the place of grace. And here's the point. John is saying, if you thought there was grace in the old, baby, you haven't seen nothing yet. That's what it's saying. Because more grace, more abundant grace, better grace, the best grace of all has now come in Jesus Christ. Grace after grace. It's not that there wasn't grace before, but now there's just so much grace. What is grace? Undeserved favor. There's more undeserved favor available to you now than there ever has been before. Grace is such an amazing idea. God, how are you going to bring people in a relationship with you? I think we'll go with grace. Really? What about all the stuff we've done, God, to offend you? I'm gracious. If you're going to come in with me, it's not going to be on your own merit, it's going to be on mine. That's what God says. And that's grace. And truth. Truth. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. He's the one and only Word made flesh. Now, verse 18, it says, no one has ever seen God. Now, the idea is with the eyes. And we say, well, what about Moses? Well, Moses was given kind of an accommodation and saw a bit of that accommodation of God accommodating himself to Moses. But nobody has looked with their eyes upon God. I don't know that you can. I don't know. You can see Jesus, and Jesus is God, so that's a coffee conversation. I haven't brought this up in a while, but that's a coffee conversation, okay? But here's what it does say. No one has ever seen God, the only God, that is Jesus, the only God, the only unique Son, the only God, Jesus is God, who is at the Father's side. This is actually who's at the Father's bosom, sitting in his lap. He's so close to God, the Father. He has made him known. He has communicated. He has explained. He has exegeted. He has expounded who God is. So do you want to know God? If you do, you must look at Jesus. He's the one that the scriptures say have communicated who God is. You want light in your life? It's in Jesus. You want life? It's in Jesus. You want truth? It's in Jesus. You want grace? It's in Jesus. You gotta come to Jesus. If your life is like a wasteland, unfurnished, disordered, dark, and scary, why don't you come to the light? The other night, I had the opportunity to stargaze with Pete. Pete has a telescope, and we were looking at stars. I'd never done that before. I'd always wanted to, never had done it before, and he has this really nice telescope, and we were looking up into the sky, and he showed me a bunch of stars. I can't remember all of them, but one of the stars we looked at was the Vega star, I believe, and the Vega star is in our galaxy, in the Milky Way, and It is 25 light years away. What does that even mean, you know, right? 25 light years away. The only way I understand, I could be completely wrong, but the only way I understand is it took 25 light years for me to see that light. You're saying, I don't even understand how that, well, I don't either. But here's my point. That star and its light has an impact on me that sustained for at least 25 light years. You know what we need in our lives? We need a light that will have sustainable impact on us for years and years and years and years. And there's only one. There's only one light that has that power, and it's Jesus Christ.